this is more than a hobby. Give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me. Shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate. I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on, you Irons. It's time, throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow. Iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd. And I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. And I'm forever.
Welcome to another episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. Brawley Darbin in St. Louis. On the other side of the line, we have Tony Clark in wherever Tony is today. How are you?
Good, good, man. I'm in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Brought it back home now. Brought it back home. Nice. But glad to talk to you, buddy.
No, yeah, I'm glad we're doing one of these. It's been a while since I think the last podcast we recorded was after the Liverpool game when I just returned from England, and since then you've actually had your own trip over across the pond, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But how's it going? How you been?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be doing better if we didn't lose both games while I was over there, but yeah, it's got to be back. You're right, the last pod we did was after your trip. I just got back on Tuesday this week. Just been super busy. That's why we didn't pod while I was over there. I went to see 5 games in 7 days. So wasn't really much pod in time, and then a tad bit relaxing. And then straight back into work, man. I think one of the biggest things I learned as an adult is when you're a kid and you have like a part-time job, you take a week and a half off. It's like, yeah, whatever, you come on back. Yeah. As an adult, it's like, nope, work didn't stop. You just got to do all the stuff you missed.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. It's one thing. Taking trips over there are totally different from when I was a kid and university, or just after when I was working part-time. And then like now you missed a whole week and a half's worth of stuff. And then you like, you're still doing the same amount of work as you would have if you were here. You're just catching up on all of it. Yeah, it sucks. Being an adult sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing, luckily I came back, I didn't have many emails. I was still doing emails and conference calls while I was there. Same, just with yeah. The time difference was tough. But when it comes to actual analysis and actual work that I do, being back, that never stopped. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Well, yeah. So yeah. We ended up actually beating Chelsea yesterday, which is, or what was it, Sunday, Saturday, whenever that was. I don't know. I'm still buzzing off of the win. I don't know about you. I don't know how you're feeling.
Yeah, I told her I wouldn't say, but I got my girlfriend up and she watched the game with me at 7:30.
Nice.
She I don't know what it was like when you and Sammy started getting together, but she's starting to realize how important West Ham is for me, that I get up at 7:30 in the morning to watch these games. And it's I don't think she understood when I was jumping up and down at 8:30 or 9 o'clock when we were winning. At the end when Masuaku just cross shot it, but it just was incredible. I was buzzing all day, just set the tone for the weekend. You know what I mean?
And you should explain to her, she has the easy being on the East Coast too, because you guys have the nicest time starts of the bunch of us over in the United States. So 7:30 for you, 6:30 for me is 5:30 for our friends, or sorry, 6:30. No, 6:30 for me, yeah. 5:30 for our friends in Colorado, Scott, Jeremiah, and Nick, and then 4:30 over on the West Coast for some of our West Coast hammers. So
yeah, so the Fresno guys were up at 4:30 at their spots.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's crazy. I don't know about that. I'll watch 4:30 in bed. I ain't going out at 4:30.
Yep. I don't think I could get up and do it. I do go out for the 6:30 kickoff sometimes. I don't love it, but it's a 40 minute drive for me into St. Louis and to the pub. So that's usually stretching it. If it was any earlier than that, I don't know that I would be doing it, but that's neither here nor there. But I guess let's just go straight into your trip. So I got back from after the Liverpool game, and then you were going over, there was an international break, and then you were going over for the Wolves, supposed to be for Vienna and Man City. Start just take us through your trip. I mean, I basically gave a day-by-day breakdown of what I did. I don't know how specific or how in detail you want to be, but I'm eager to hear it because I haven't talked to you about it at all.
Yeah, I'll go through a little bit. I'll keep it a little more high level. But long story short, yeah, so I fly over there. It was good news. thinking everything's all right, thinking I'm going to Vienna, right? Go to Wolves on a Saturday. That was exciting. I've been to Wolves before, for Wolves with QPR on a just a normal match. But I've never been to West Ham away at Wolves. And the atmosphere, one of the things my friends and I were talking about is the atmosphere at Wolves for an away day kind of sucks. Because they, as cool as it is to have that long strip on the sideline, it really is difficult to get any chance going. It's by the time it gets from one corner flag to the other, it's about dead. So I think that's why that they, one of the reasons they give up those seats, and rather than selling more expensive sideline seats, is the away atmosphere was dull.
I had no idea. So are the away fans at Wolves, you got like one entire length of the pitch on one side?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I don't know that I knew that.
Maybe about 15 to 20 rows deep. So not much, not very deep, a thin sliver that goes the whole way across.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah, it's not like you get 3,000 behind the net. You get a 3,000 stretched across the whole way.
Wow.
Yeah, so the atmosphere was dull. And on top of that, the team played like dog shit.
That was our worst performance of the year, I think.
I mean, I just was sick watching it. It was just so bland and terrible. So that obviously gave nobody anything to get going about anyway. So that was just all around bad.
X mentioned, he said the X and Dave both mentioned and said that the home atmosphere is actually really good for like home fans. Normally it's the home fans that are quiet and the away fans that are loud, but they said it was kind of reversed in that game. Would you agree with that? The Wolves fans are some of the best fans in the country.
Oh, I would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, the atmosphere was great. They had a good pregame performance and all those like fireworks, fire shows and stuff. Yeah. Their support was great. I think one of the things I liked about the Wolves support, at least that I saw, they were all loud getting behind the team. They weren't loud coming at West Ham fans. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were all about the support getting behind their own team, and that was cool. Like, there weren't people really that much, because we were in the corner. They weren't giving it the large or being tough guys. They were just all about their team and the performance that they put on the pitch. So I thought that was kind of cool too, of note.
No, that is cool.
But yeah, I mean, Wolves was fun. The away pub was cool as well. I liked it. I don't think many other people would have. It was the away pub we went to was at this like across the street from a hotel. But we pretty much took our beers out of the pub, and there was like this little patio outdoor area, and we stood out there, had a table and all that, so I had a blast. It wasn't your typical away pub where like everyone's crammed in there and everyone's singing, or at least it could have been inside. I didn't go inside.
Yeah, our crew typically likes the more social pubs where you can like sit, have a chat, like talk about what's going on, versus you get your Stone Island lads crammed into a pub up on the chairs, screaming, shouting, beer going everywhere, which I enjoy both from time to time. I would rather be able to talk and have a conversation, but every now and again, when you get rammed in and you're doing nothing but singing and shouting, it is a good time. It's something everyone should experience at least once, because it is an experience. But I would prefer to be able to talk.
No, I hate more than, maybe I'm just old spirited, dog. Nothing I hate more than watching someone pay like £7 for a beer and then dumping it all over me. I don't think so. Absolutely not. So I'm completely against like beer throwing and all that jumping around shit. I don't mind if other people want to do it. Just don't do it on me. Let me put it like that.
I don't like the faking beer throw, like when you're just doing it just to do it. Now, if it's a natural reaction to a goal or something, that's one thing. Like in Genk, actually. So we could drink at our seats, and when we scored, the beer went flying. And it was like two people, cups fell out of their hand behind me because they all got shoved forward, and then beer just went flying forward. I don't mind that. But if it's like in a pub when everyone's just standing and screaming and someone's got a full pint of lager that they just like throw in the air, like I think that's stupid. Why would you waste your money on that? I don't understand that either.
Yeah, I agree. So that was a fun day. Later in the week. So one of the things is I'm trying to do the 92, by the way. And for any of our listeners who don't know, obviously there's 92 teams in the top four divisions. I'm trying to go to all 92 grounds.
Right.
So Wolves was not a new ground for me, but because we were bored and had nothing to do on Tuesday night, we drove an hour and a half from Reading area down to Forest Green Rovers, who are top of League Two right now. Yeah. So I got to see a new ground there. That was cool. League Two side, very small ground, all vegetarian and vegan food.
Yep.
In the ground, we stood on the one end line in the terraced end because they don't have to have all seaters down that far. And we just leaned on the rail, chatted shit the whole time, watched Forest Green versus Barrow, and it was a good time. That was a fun Tuesday. And then it all kicked off because we couldn't go to Vienna. I think this was actually earlier in the week. But point of the story, we ended up getting our money back, vouchers for the flights.
So you were planning on still going to Vienna, even though you couldn't actually legally get into the game, is what you're trying.
Yes. We were planning on going to Vienna anyway. We weren't going to try to get into the game. We weren't going to try to buy home end tickets. We were just going to go enjoy a lad's weekend in Vienna and have a good time. And then the lockdown happened.
Yep.
So since the lockdown happened, me and my buddy Andy, our buddy Andy, decided to go on an adventure. And we said, well, shit, we can't get into Vienna. How about we go up to Glasgow and see if we can get tickets for the Rangers game in the Europa League on Thursday.
Yeah.
So somehow, some way, we found a hookup and got tickets for the Rangers game. So on the way up, though, because it's a 7-hour or something drive, we decided, we drove up, but we stopped in Manchester on Wednesday, went to the National History Museum of Football.
Okay.
So that was absolutely cool. There's a lot of exhibits there. I highly recommend if anyone can get up to Manchester. I didn't think it was overly expensive. I got a picture with a exact replica of the Premier League title since we're going to hoist it in May anyway.
Yep, that's the same one we'll be winning in May, yep.
So, I mean, it was a really cool experience. And then we went to Blackburn Rovers versus Peterborough on Wednesday night. That's a new ground for me. Never been to Ewood Park.
Okay.
We sat in the Peterborough end, so we sat with the away fans while they got smacked 4-0.
Nice.
So something about me being the jinx, I guess. I came over and brought us bad luck against Wolves, and I brought Peterborough bad luck against Blackburn.
Do Peterborough have some on loan West Ham players?
Yeah, Connor Coventry.
Coventry plays for them. Yeah.
Yep, he came on in the 61st minute, so nice. That was cool. Got to see him a little bit, and then drove up later that night the whole rest of the way up to Glasgow and stayed there that night. Glasgow is a really cool city. We did one of those open bus tours on Thursday morning. I always thought they were lame, right? I see people in these buses, I'm like, yo, what a bunch of losers. Nah, that was one of the coolest things I ever did. I will definitely be doing more open bus tours.
Dude, they're cool.
It was an hour and a half, and we didn't get on. You can get on and off with your ticket.
Yeah.
We only got off one time halfway through to use the restroom at this cool transportation museum because I love transportation. Hop back on and done the rest of the thing. I learned a whole bunch of shit, got all the good pictures, and it was an hour and a half to see a city I've never seen before. So highly recommend.
Did you go see Celtic's ground?
No, I did not. With the timing, what we did was we ended up going back, did some shopping, got some gifts for some people, and then we kicked it out to a Rangers bar. And this Rangers bar was right out of Ibrox underground station.
Okay.
and it was called the Loudon Tavern. And that place was crazy. The entire place was painted red, white, and blue. They were singing all types of songs. The place was absolutely rammed. Like I've never, it was incredible. And they had Coors Light on draft. I mean, I was living my best life. So that was cool. We had amazing tickets to the Rangers game. Obviously, I've never been to Scotland in general, so I have to see Rangers versus Prague. I scouted Holzak for us, or however
Holzak. So that was Spartak Prague.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you did get to go to a Europa League game.
I did, just not ours. And they had the West Ham game on in the pub. We asked them to put it on, and they did. So we got to watch West Ham win 2-0 against Vienna, which was a shame because I should have been there. I was a little salty the whole time, if I'm honest with you. Mm. Like watching the game, watching us score, knowing the scenes that would have been in the away end when I was there. I was very happy and very sad at the same time. It was like this weird feeling.
Sure.
The Rangers game was fun.
That was Thanksgiving Day.
That was Thanksgiving Day.
Did you do any Thanksgiving festivities or anything?
Friday. We had a little Thanksgiving roast dinner type situation with chicken instead of turkey, but it was good. But yeah, the Rangers game was cool. Awesome atmosphere. Prague didn't bring many people, but I think they were very limited with the racism and violence. They were like only allotted a tiny bit. And we couldn't really see them from our section anyway, where we were seated. Hmm. But yeah, so if you could ever get up to a Rangers game, highly recommend it. That was a cool stadium. Great bar to go to. Fans were very welcoming. No drama.
Would you say the Rangers would be your Scottish team now? Rangers would be?
I don't really have a Scottish team. Okay, so here's the thing, and I don't really want to get too into it because it's obviously very like hostile and political. But like growing up, I had a friend who was a Celtic fan, so I had a whole bunch of Celtic stuff. Mm. But then going today, I got to experience a whole Rangers experience. It was cool as hell. So I bought like a Rangers sweater. So I'm like your typical American that would never fly in England or Scotland.
Right.
You know what I mean? But like, because I'm an American, I feel like I have an excuse. I don't have any ties for religion or area or sure. to the country. So I feel like it's okay for me, but so yeah, I don't really have a team. I enjoy watching football.
Got it.
Let's see, anything else that was interesting on the trip? City away, did city away. And that was freezing cold. It was snowing. We drove up in the snow. Thought that hopefully we don't get stranded. One weird thing about England, I guess, compared to hopefully some of our American listeners understand. I know like our Minneapolis guys, or even for me in Pennsylvania, I don't know how it is in St. Louis, but like 10 inches of snow, they got that shit plowed and you're out driving again. Yeah. You know what I mean? 2 inches of snow in England, the entire infrastructure of the country shut down.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So did it take forever to get up there or back?
It took longer to get back just because idiots didn't know how to drive in the snow. Nor again, like to their credit, they're also not prepared. You know, they just don't prepare for any snow. They don't have snow tires. They don't have winter tires, stuff like that.
They don't have air conditioning in their houses for
right,
the summer.
Right, exactly, because you don't need it. Right. And you're not going to invest millions and millions and billions of dollars in the infrastructure for something to happen once every 3 years.
Right.
So I don't want to get too much into game specifics because we're going to talk more about Chelsea. But I really thought we played all right against City.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that I think that they deserve to win. I thought we played well enough for a draw if we really did get there. And I think 2-1 is a fair result, so I'm not mad or nothing. And then the rest of the trip was pretty much just working the whole time, and I flew home, and here we are. And then we draw Brighton. while I come back, and then we beat Chelsea. So I really missed the Chelsea game. I was a little annoyed.
Well, about, I bet but... you're probably glad you didn't stay for the Brighton game. So
no, if I got a loss against Wolves, a loss against City, a draw against, and I stayed for the Brighton game, I genuinely think that I would have like been sick to my stomach. It would have been very West Ham.
The problem is you got spoiled going over there before, where we would always win. And usually it was me going over and we would lose every single time I would go over. So
I will say, you're right. I have been very lucky to go over and see us win a lot of games when I've been over. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was just this time. The first time I ever went over was Leicester at home and Bournemouth at home in the last season of the bowl, and then we lost both. So I've been there in times that we've lost both. I've been there in times where we've won all three. So, I mean, I think this was just one of those times where I got unlucky.
Yeah, and it's going to happen. I mean, I've always convinced myself when I go over that the result is secondary to the day out and the experience. Like, the game itself is usually the last thing I really care about, because it's not about the game that you go for. It's more about the memories you make with the boys on the day.
I mean that really is the nuts and bolts of it. You know, this was my first trip over since January 2020. And you know me, I go 3-4 times a year. So like, it was really eating at my heart to not be there even for a weekend. So to go for a week and a half, enjoy myself, see my friends, see my British family, and really enjoy the time together. It was great.
Yeah. And I hadn't been since December of 2017, so it was way too long for both of us. So yeah, we were both feeling the same thing. I'm glad life is starting to return to some sort of normality, put it that way. But as for the Man City game, I agree with you. I thought our performance was okay in it. A draw I would have been fine with. Didn't they also have like two goals ruled out? I know they had at least one ruled out. But yeah, the game was okay. I mean, what do you expect? You're playing against probably the best team in the world, or top five team in the world, and it's always going to be a tricky day. The Etihad, I think we've only ever won there once, and I could be wrong in saying that, but I think we've only won there once. I remember Victor Moses scoring for us against them back, I think it was the final year at the Bowling. But that's a ground we typically lose 5 or 6-0 at, so to only see us lose by one is good. And you were probably freezing. You guys were probably dying to get out of there too at 2-0.
Yeah, I mean, it was cold. It was not enjoyable. And we didn't really get to go to an away pub either. Like, we went straight to the ground and had a drink inside the concourse. Oh, so really? Like, it really was like a day about being with your friends, because it definitely was not about the day out. It wasn't about the game. It was just like, all right, boys, everybody wanted. Who wants to drive up for our loss at the Etihad? Me, you know. It was literally, that's how we all were. We're like, hey, if we get something, great. If not, you know, we're just fucking psychopaths for driving 4 hours to watch us lose. But here we are.
Because Manchester's one of those cities I feel like you could easily get the train to. Was that not an option?
I mean, from Reading, you can fairly easily. I think the issue I have is just, like, for me, it's justifying the cost. You know, the trains, sometimes the trains in England are cheap and sometimes they're inexpensive. You know, I went on my trip, I went to see my old boss in Oxford, and went up for half a day. I went up off peak, $13 round trip, you know, it was like nothing.
Yeah.
But sometimes if you try to get from like London to Manchester at the right time or the wrong time, and hitting the right train or the last train, you're looking at like $200 round trip. And it's like, well, fuck, $200 to ride the train. You know, if four guys can get in the car and all split the gas, you know, why not?
Yeah, no,
same amount of time.
I totally agree. Well, I'm glad you had a somewhat good trip. Like we say, it's not about the results, it's about the experience. So it sounded like you had some good experiences in. Vienna thing, I was gutted for you guys about Vienna.
Oh, dude, I'm so mad, because I was so mad. We were all, and then our entire group were being assholes. They're like, yo, how come you've been talking about coming over here for the Europa League since May? Brawley wasn't even planning on coming over. Next thing you know, he got to go to Genk and you ain't getting a Europa League game. I was like, man, fuck all y'all and fuck you, Brawley.
Hey, I wasn't the one saying this. I have. This is the first time I'm hearing about
you
this.
You felt it. No, I know you felt that. Dog, I was so upset. I was really upset.
Yeah, because we when I was over there, they were all talking about the planning for Vienna and how it was only 3 weeks away from when I was there, and everyone was looking forward to it, and they were, because we were figuring out how it would work. So it was like me being in Belgium was like a test run for you being in Austria, like with the COVID passes and everything like that. Yep. And like, it was good that I was there to get that experience so I could help everyone out who was going after me. But then like the testing rules changed, I think, while you were there probably.
And yeah, it was like we scheduled emergency on the spot test at Heathrow.
Yeah,
for like 100-some pounds.
Did you do a PCR test? Because when I was there, it was only antigen. I didn't have to do a PCR test.
Yeah, there was like on the spot PCRs where like we do it a few hours before, because we were talking about I'd rather be stuck in England than stuck trying to get back to England from Austria.
100%.
Like flying over there, getting stuck in Austria. Like for me, I would have been double fucked because like I don't even live in England. I live in America. So, yeah, it was the whole thing was a mess when it comes to COVID. But we adapted and had I really had a blast in the trip, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. So now I'm up to 27 of 92.
Nice.
For my, which I think is, like I always say, it's pretty damn good for an American.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really had a good time. Can we transition to the Chelsea game? I mean, like, holy shit. What a result that was.
Absolutely. Well, I guess we'll start with the lineup again. Did you have any issues with the lineup when it was released? So we went five at the back, which people were a little skeptical about. What were your thoughts?
I was surprised that they went with Ben Johnson over Masuaku. But I think that they just wanted the extra cover. And I guess if you trust Ben Johnson being a right-footed player on that side over Masuaku, then
says a lot about Masuaku, doesn't it?
I think it says a lot about both players, frankly. I think it says that they really do rate Ben Johnson. It's a shame that it's a good and bad thing that them and Sofal are pushing each other, you know, because I don't think Sofal really did anything to really lose a spot. I think Ben Johnson really just been playing out of his mind.
Just got injured. I mean,
And Johnson stepped up and he couldn't get back in the side. So I think it's just one of those things where it was like, hey, two players playing well in one spot.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I do think it speaks volumes for Masuaku. More so than Ben Johnson. Like if you're trusting a right back, a right-footed right back to play left back over, and Masuaku even admits himself he's not a left back. So I guess let's be clear there. But Ben Johnson is a far better defender than Masuaku, in my opinion. I don't know if you agree with that, but
not even controversial.
Defensively, Ben Johnson is miles ahead of Masuaku. Skipping ahead, I wasn't even thrilled that Masuaku was coming on. So it was like that says it. So I was good with Ben Johnson at left back. I was okay with the lineup. I felt bad because I'm a Benrahma lover. And so I totally understood Lanzini coming in for him though. I was just like sad to see that happen. Like Lanzini's in better form right now. And so I was a little disappointed. And then leaving Fornals off the bench to go five at the back, I was like, huh. I said, we'll see. We got to trust David Moyes. So that's what I kept telling myself. And then we get into the game. We go 1-0 down to Thiago Silva's header. And I wouldn't say I was giving up hope, but I thought, oh boy, we could be in real trouble here going down early.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. It's easy to get on the podcast and say like, yo, no, I thought we had a chance the whole time. But I'm not a liar, you know. I definitely thought when we went 1-0 down, I was like, oh, shit. I got up early for this. This is going to be a long day. I think at one point, like, the first 20 minutes in their possession was 80-20.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't even get on the ball. I was being a fickle fan. And I think one of the things about being a true fan is being honest with everyone and be like, yeah, I was fickle. I was like, I thought it was end of the world. That it was going to be another long 70 minutes. So like them going up 1-0, I was like, yep, sounds about right. We could be in some trouble here today.
Yeah. And
well, one other thing is when you line up the way we did against City,
yes,
and you line up the way we do against Chelsea, I'm okay with that. I'm totally cool with that. But you can't concede first. Like, you have or to early, make a goal, yeah, or mm-hmm, early. Because if you set up five in the back and you concede early, you don't have much option.
No, your game plan goes out the window.
Right. But then you would either have to make an early sub or try to readjust or do the same thing with five in the back. So it's really messy when that happens. So, yeah, I was a bit concerned, especially going down and then not having the right personnel on the pitch to push forward. But I thought we were too respectful of Chelsea as well.
At first we were, yeah. It was the same against Man City. So I thought we showed Man City too much respect. It was a lot like the Liverpool game last season, where I thought we showed them way, 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 way too much respect. And I get it to a certain point, but when you go one down and then you're still sitting off the ball for 80-20, that's when it's not acceptable. So, yeah, but less than 10 minutes, or I think right at 10 minutes after they scored, we get that gift of a penalty. I don't know what it is about these top goalkeepers coming to play West Ham and them turning into Roberto in the process, but the pass back to Mendy and Allison.
Was terrible. I was Allison, like, what are you doing?
It was not a good pass back, but also Mendy should just be, if you're in pressure like that, don't try to take a touch. You just need to boot it away. Took a touch, bad touch. It was the touch of a goalkeeper. And then Jared Bowen slips in there for a stonewall definite penalty. And I had no idea who was going to step up and take the penalty either. I was like, in my head, I think I was thinking Declan would do it. And then I was like, well, maybe Antonio.
He missed last time.
He did. Declan missed his last one. Antonio missed his last one. That's why I had no idea. And Noble missed his last one, but he wasn't on the pitch. So it was like, who's going to step up and take this? And I saw Lanzini stepping up and I was like, oh, I don't know if I like
Mr. Big Balls. That took some nuts, man.
It did.
So against Chelsea, and he put that perfectly into the side netting. Yep. It was absolute genius penalty. I mean, just ice in his veins, just eight nails, and then had the nerve to bump Reece James after. I mean, it was just like, yo, that was some tough shit.
Well, if you're Reece James, you got to be expecting that, because if you're screaming and shouting and hurling abuse at a player trying to take a penalty and then he scores it, you better expect him to give it right back to you. That's what people didn't see, because it was kind of it was just zoomed in on Lanzini, so you didn't see what Reece James was doing, but there was an angle that you could see Reece James like shouting and trying to put him off, which is why Lanzini made the reaction, went up to him. And I saw a bunch of people on Twitter, like Chelsea fans, saying, oh, after Mount scores, which we'll get to the Mount goal, but after Mount scored, these Chelsea fans on Twitter saying, oh, that's, you don't mess with one of our own, we're gonna come in, we're gonna dominate the game from here on out. And then lo and behold, we go on and win the game. So it was good. I was really happy when Lanzini scored. In my head, I was convincing myself he was gonna miss it so that I wouldn't be mad. I was like, okay, he's gonna miss it, don't get mad, it'll be saved, or he's gonna miss it, just I'm not gonna worry about it. And then he scored it. So it was a pleasant surprise. And then 4 minutes later, Mount scores that worldie.
I wouldn't even know.
It's
not
a great goal.
It was not a great goal.
What?
It was not a great. It wasn't.
Dude, there's a 40-yard pass, and he takes it first time on the valley.
Was better than the pass was. Dude, that's a world-class goal. He just took it on the volley on the side foot, and
first time.
I thought it was bad. I thought it was bad goalkeeping.
Oh.
I thought It was near post, and it wasn't even that far from him. And it was maybe about almost 17, 18 yards out. I expected Fabianski to save that.
Oh, it was in the box. It wasn't 18 yards out. I mean, he was in the area, but I would have
expected Fabianski to do better. I have high expectations for Fabianski. I think he's a much better goalkeeper. I mean, it was well struck. I'm not saying it was a shit goal, but to be like, oh, it was an absolute worldie. I mean, no, I don't think the goalkeeper was that great. I don't agree that it was goal of the season worldie or anything like that.
No, I wasn't calling it goal of the season, but I do think it's a world-class finish. The technique is brilliant. Should you be getting beat your near post like that? Probably not.
Yeah, it was
not.
Good technique.
Tim Howard did good analysis on it at halftime. It was like the worst time to concede a goal. I mean, it's as deflating as it gets to concede right before halftime. But Tim Howard did good analysis on it, showing how Fabianski definitely wasn't expecting a shot there because he was in the air when the ball actually came to mount, so that he was shuffling to his left in the air trying to get himself set. And that's why he wasn't able to get down to his left to make the save, is because he was in the air trying to get his feet set for the cross. Needless to say, yeah, I think Tim Howard actually agrees with you and said he probably should be saving that. And I did too, if I'm honest, but I didn't take anything away from the finish, because to take that first time volley less than an inch away from the post, and then I thought it was a great goal. But
hey, it was a good goal. I'm not hating. I mean, the technique for the volley, sure. I just wouldn't class it. I mean, I'm just coming at the word you use. I wouldn't call it like a worldie. I just think that was poor goalkeeping and good technique.
Yeah, we'll agree to disagree, which is nice.
So, but we will agree that it was the worst time to concede. I was like, oh, man. I was like, we did well to get it back 1-1 and try to get into the half, readjust, come out strong. And he did that, and we go into the break 2-1.
Yeah, it was a kick in the dick. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I mean, that's as bad of a time to concede a goal as you can possibly get in the first half, because David Moyes is preparing his team speech. Okay, 1-1. We'll get in there, reanalyze what happened, and figure out what we need to do for the second half, and then we go in and concede. It was just a tough way to end the half. And Ben Johnson actually hurt himself on that run back from the goal, which I was like really confused. I was kind of upset with Ben, because he wasn't making an effort to get back. I mean, he was just jogging back. I was like, where's the right back? Where's the right back? Why is no one over there to cover him? And you see Ben Johnson just gliding back. And now it makes sense, because he went down hurt after the play and he wasn't able to get back in the play. But that was my biggest issue with the goal, is that no one was over there to defend the cross, and there was no real urgency. So that's why it was so frustrating to me. But hopefully Ben Johnson is going to be out for too long. I mean, losing, well, I guess we'll get to Kurt Zouma later, but we go into halftime 2-1 down. David Moyes doesn't make a halftime substitution, which I was actually kind of surprised with. I shouldn't say I was surprised with, because rarely does he ever make a sub at halftime, but I kind of thought, okay, 5 at the back isn't going to work anymore. We're down 1 at halftime. Let's change it up. Let's get Fornals on for I would have said Ben Johnson actually, but needless to say, he didn't do that. Lukaku comes on at halftime. We're thinking, oh, goodness gracious, we could be in for a long second half here. And then we get the next one. Jared Bowen, another first-time finish, another great goal.
Yeah, I mean, the way that he just tucked it onto his left and put it in the side. But again, maybe I think I'm being really critical, but I think it'd be hypocritical for me to not feel the same way about Mendy. I don't think it was a hard shot, but I didn't think it was really all that excellent placement either for Bowen.
What are you talking about? I don't understand where you're coming from this podcast.
I literally just watched the highlight. I literally just watched it.
I've watched it like 8 times. Your criticism of goalkeeping in this episode is off the charts. I mean, Mendy was bad. Don't get me wrong. The first and the third goals that Mendy gave up were inexcusable goals to give up. But the second one, Bowen, he has no chance of stopping that, in my opinion.
I'm really watching it right now. So let's see. It gets knocked over to him, and he it goes right under his hand. I'm rewatching it right now, and it goes right under his hand. It was just a hard shot. It wasn't really anything special. I mean, I'm glad he scored it, but I don't think that if you are Eduardo Mendy and you are that top rated guy, I have high expectation that someone should say that. Are you rewatching it now too?
Yeah, I'm trying to right now, but I still don't think I'm going to agree with it.
No. I mean, you don't have to. You don't. Okay, for anybody just watching that, Brawley just threw his cat safely across the room instead of jumping on the microphone so that he can watch this. But so when you watch it, so Foul kind of nicks it over to Bowen, and Bowen takes it on his left foot one time, like you said, and hits it hard.
Oh, he hits side netting.
Eduardo Mendy was right there for it.
It was in the corner.
I'm glad he did.
And score. It didn't go under his hand. It went. Anyway, yeah, we're trying to watch and talk at the same time, but it goes between the defender's legs to start with. So it could have gone anywhere, and he probably didn't see it until a little bit after he wanted to.
Either way, West Ham 2-2, solid finish. And we go in. What are your thoughts here? Are you thinking hold on for a draw, push for three?
I would have bitten your hand off for a draw. I didn't think we'd go on and win the game. Not a chance in hell. I really didn't think so. I would have been all over a draw. I wish the game would have ended. If you'd offered me the game to end right then after Bowen scored, I would have taken it, because I would have thought that Chelsea would push on and, you know, probably score a late winner. And I think I even said in the group, I was like, who's slowly preparing themselves for a inevitable Lukaku winner. And luckily I don't even remember Lukaku touching the ball like in the second half, like at all.
No,
which is crazy. Not really. Which is, blows my mind. And then, so obviously Zuma goes down injured shortly after our goal, which I thought that could be the biggest injury loss for us this year. Him and Ogbonna.
And Havertz on the tackle, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't Havertz. It was because Havertz went off in the 46th minute for Lukaku. I don't remember who it was now.
Either way, he did amazing saving tackle, because I think Declan gave the ball away.
Yes.
Somebody gave the ball away. And then Zuma makes a last-ditch tackle, forces a corner, but takes himself out, essentially.
Yeah.
And now he's out for, 2 to 3 months, was it? 3 to 4? Well,
yeah, they're not sure. It could be anywhere between 2 and 4. Luckily, it wasn't an ACL tear, which is – the worst case. I mean, if him and Ogbonna would have both torn their ACLs, I mean, that's crucial. No pun intended for the ligament. No, so yeah, apologies for that. But yeah, that they are truly the spine of the team. I mean, they've really inserted themselves, and there's not many better pairings central defenders in the Premier League on form at the moment. Before they got injured, Ogbonna and Zuma, I thought they were just terrific together. They really worked well off of each other, and losing the left-footed center half is huge. And then we go and lose both of them. That Dawson and Diop are really good backup.
I think they'll be serviceable, but I don't have high expectations against good teams like Arsenal.
No,
against good teams in that top six.
No, yeah, they're great backup to have, which is why they're there. This is good that they're there. Unfortunately, it now means we have no rotation of center backs for any of the competitions we're in, because typically in Europe, we play Dawson and Diop together. We have no rotation of central defenders now, which means I don't even know the names of the kids. Elise and Baptiste, I think, are the two center backs in the academy that everyone's raving about. They might have to play on against Zagreb, which isn't the end of the world.
That's fine. We've already clinched the group, so
yeah, we're good there. But I think in January, this means we have to go and buy one,
if not two.
We got to go get a good one, like a Tarkowski, an Ake, someone like that. You might even throw Nat Phillips into that discussion. And then I think you need to go get one. A lot like, you know how Liverpool, they had their center back crisis last year with Van Dijk and Gomez. Mm-hmm. And
they had Fabinho playing center back at one point.
So they went and bought some guy from the championship I'd never heard of. And then they also went and got another guy I'd never heard of. That's what we're going to have to do. I mean, we're going to need depth and rotation. So it's a must add now. And then, okay. So to jump ahead to the goal, your first instinct when that ball goes in, I know we're celebrating and screaming, but your reaction, is that a shot or a cross? Your first instinct of it.
Oh, that motherfucker, that was absolutely a cross that he missed
100%.
Absolutely. Yeah. Quit lying. Good for him though. But that goalkeeping was terrible there.
The crazy thing is no one on planet Earth expects Masuaku to shoot from there because he always crosses it. And the crazy thing is his crosses are usually shit. I mean, his crosses prior to that were terrible. He hit one over the bar. He hit one right into Mendy's arms and he hit one right into the first man before that. So me included are thinking, okay, he's going to cross it. And in Mendy's defense, his cross was so shit that it actually ended up in the back of the net. Like that was such a bad cross that it turned out to be a good thing. That's the frustrating thing about Masuaku to me is why. And I know he's not playing regularly, but if defensively you're a liability, your attacking has to be really good. And that's where he's been lacking for me. Like when we were in Genk, he was the worst player on the pitch, Masuaku, against Genk in that first half. He was horrific. And then that's why I wasn't so excited about him coming on, but then obviously goes and does what he did. He's a great character, Arthur. I do like his personality, but sorry, go ahead and you can say what you wanted to say.
One of the other things that was about though is if he actually shot that, Mendy would have saved it because of his body angle and his the way he would have lined up a target would have red shot. That cross, like you said, was so mishit, the way it dipped and all that, it literally was just almost the perfect shot. To describe it, I know I'm like, but to describe it, think about when you're taking a pen, right? And the way like they, if you open your hips, you're going one way, you close your hips, you're going the other way, they can read it. He opened his hips like for a cross and just was bad. It wasn't like he lined up for a shot. The way I saw that. And hey, happy days, 3-2, scenes in the stands, scenes at the house. I mean, I was running around in circles trying to be quiet, it was crazy.
When Bowen scored, I screamed really loudly, and that was probably about 7 a.m. local time here. Man, it might be 7:30 local time here. And Sammy was sleeping with Hayes, to get him to go back to sleep. And I screamed, and instantly Hayes starts screaming because I woke him up, and she was not happy with me in the slightest that I woke Hayes up. She's like, why couldn't you just be quiet? I'm like, I tried. It's not like I wanted to scream. It's just a natural reaction. Like Lanzini's goal, I didn't scream for because I was anticipating that. I was not anticipating Bowen or Masuaku scoring. And when Masuaku scored, I screamed even louder because luckily everyone was awake by that time. So I was able to run around and scream and jump around with Hayes, which was nice. It's really hard to watch a game with a sleeping baby in the room, I must say, because I've gotten good at it, but that Chelsea game surprised me so that I was not able to contain my emotions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So happy days, 3 points at the time. I guess what was really weird about this whole situation anyway, talking about our 3 points that we took, but going into the game, we lost 2 and drew 1 and we're still sitting 4th.
Yeah.
Which frustrates me more than anything that we should have taken 3 from Brighton and we just let them hang around all game and got punished for it. and we played terrible against Wolves. Now, am I saying we're going to win every game? Absolutely not. Are they going to have shockers? Sure. But, you know, we were so good early in the year that we put ourselves in a position to have a few bad games, and we're sitting fourth. So yeah. Now...
I don't know if we'll ever beat Brighton, ever. I'm just, like, relegated myself to the fact that we may never actually beat Brighton in our lifetimes again. You know, the last time... Do you know when the last time we beat Brighton was?
No.
That was the 6-0 thumping of them in the championship. Vazte hat trick. That was the last time we beat Brighton. Since they've come up, we have lost 3 and drawn 6. And we have not beaten them one time since they've come up to the Premier League. That is astounding. I mean, that really is. We
drew them the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 meetings now. Yes.
Yep.
Wow. No, I never really realized that. The last time we beat them was 6-0 in the championship. Holy smokes.
Yeah, I mean, that is just insane. And we should mention the fact that the offside decision to rule out our goal was a bit dodgy. I still haven't seen a good clear angle of it where it clearly hits Antonio's leg. Now, I would like to think that there's no way they would overturn that goal without clear evidence that would happen. There's probably an angle that we're not seeing. But on the TV, there was no clear evidence of Antonio getting a touch on that ball as it came through, that he was in an offside position. So, and I was baffled at the time, because obviously you get confused with the goalkeeper's not back there. The goalkeeper's not the furthest player back. So when you get that angle of looking at two defenders on the line and Antonio right there, there's no way that's offside. And then it takes a second for you to realize, oh yeah, he's not the last defender. But I still think that was a bit controversial. And even David Moyes said he hasn't seen an angle where it clearly touches Antonio and he would like an explanation. And he has never gotten that. So I think we're 2-0 up. We win that game. And I think that's a bit disappointing.
I agree. But either way, that result puts us on 27. And after the whole weekend's gone through now, we are still sitting fourth. We're 3 points ahead of United. 4 points ahead of Arsenal, 2 points ahead of Spurs. Spurs have a game in hand.
Yep.
But, you know, if we would have lost that game, we'd be on 24 and we'd be down in sixth.
Sixth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, getting 3 points off of first place Chelsea at the time was a massive, massive result going into Zagreb at home in the Europa League, hopefully going to rest a bunch of guys, and a big match against struggling Burnley. You know, Burnley are going to be tough away at the Turf Moor, looking for points in their relegation fight. This is not an easy-handed 3 points either.
No.
So I hope we don't have the same mentality against Wolves. I think that they came out and were in such good form that they were going to walk all over Wolves, and they did not put the energy and effort out to do so. So I hope that the boys come out ready to play against Burnley. Same with Brighton. You know, I thought we outplayed Brighton, but we didn't capitalize, and, you know, the dodgy decision. But you're right, 2-0, I think we would beat Brighton. But we let them hang in there anyway. You can't make excuses. You got to finish. So
Mopai is turning into the new Glenn Murray for Brighton, I think. Every time Mopai plays against us, he's going to score. Yeah,
you talk about a worldie. That was a brilliant goal.
Good technique, yeah.
Yeah. So either way, you know, we got to really step it up against Burnley. Same energy that we had against Chelsea, and take another 3 points and keep pushing.
We could have done with Newcastle beating, or at least Burnley at least getting a draw against Newcastle. But Burnley lost to the worst team in the Premier League, and now they're going to be, I think Dyche is going to have them itching for performance. So it will not be an easy game. And I think it's a trap game. We could easily end up dropping points in that one.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think we got to be on it, and I hope we are, and I think we will. I think the Moyes and the boys are going to be ready for it and learn from their mistakes.
Yeah, well, I think we can go ahead. We did actually get a question request put out this week. Do you want to go ahead and just move straight into the question portion of the podcast?
Yeah, let's roll into that. Folks, if you do hear me sound a little weird, I am a bit under the weather. So hopefully we have a good amount of questions here and we can move on to that. Should I go ahead? Do you want to go with the first one?
The first one here is from Tony Hatcher. And he asks, trying to plan out my first trip over to watch a game, any tips for the process or process? I don't know why I said process. I know you've gone over some before. Right now, I'm trying to convince my fiance that buying a plane ticket before schedule is released is mad, but we're looking at October. So, Tony, I think you can start with this one. You usually give better advice than I usually have since you've gone over more than I have. But any tips for our boy Tony making the first trip over?
Yes. Okay. If you're going to book that far in advance, I think you're okay. Your issue is going to be whether it's going to be a home game or away game. If it's a home game, you'll be fine on getting tickets. I'm sure someone will be able to help sort you out. If it's an away game, if it's not a big away game, like let's say it's somewhere that everyone's already done, like Everton or Newcastle, and you feel like going far, or it's in the Midlands, like Leicester or Leeds or something like that, Wolves or West Brom, if they come up, something like that, you should be okay getting away tickets. You'll have to try and find someone to help sort you out, but you should be okay. There's plenty of spares going. I think my suggestion for flights, though, beyond tickets and schedule, is going to make sure that you book Thursday to Tuesday. Yeah. Make sure that you give yourself a chance. If they move that Premier League game to a Friday night, that you can still go, or they move that game to a Monday, you can still go. So that's the advice I have for that. The last piece of advice I have is typically UEFA puts it out, but I would make sure that you take a look to see if there's any international breaks in October and what weekends, and avoid that. And I believe they usually announce that for the whole year come January. So I would take a look out for that. That would be my advice. So on flights, make sure that you have Friday and Monday open in England still, and look to see when UEFA's calendar is.
I totally agree about being able to change your if Sky changes the TV game, because I've gotten burned on that before. I was due to leave on a Monday, and Sky moved our game to a Monday against Spurs, and I had to miss that before. So I know the pain of that. It sucks. It's really infuriating when that happens. So take Tony's advice on that one. My only advice is, if you're going to an away game, everyone's heard us before, be smart about wearing colors. Going to games in England is a bit different than going here in the United States. If you go to a home game, you can wear your jersey, you can wear colors, you can wear scarves, hats. You do that all you want. Nothing wrong with that. If you go to an away game, like a spicy away game where it could get lively, I don't wear colors to away games. Our friends don't. Tony, I know you don't.
I don't.
I don't. It's not worth even the risk of someone just getting into trouble, because it's not worth it. I don't want to fight you over West Ham. I'm fat, short. I can't fight. So I don't want any part of that. I don't want the trouble. So I typically don't wear colors. Like when I was in Zagreb, I just wore black. Just because I didn't want to run the risk of anything. My other advice is, I guess if you're planning that far out in advance, you don't really have it, but pick somewhere you really want to go. But if you don't know the schedule, then I think your fiance might be onto something. I would probably wait till the schedule was released to pick the games, but hey, different strokes for different folks, Tony. If you want to run the risk of whatever game it is, then that's the gamble you take when you book without knowing the fixtures.
Most likely the plane ticket prices hopefully should still be cheap enough come May, June, when the schedule's announced. So I would hold off. If you are going to book now, I would follow our advice, but either way, I think you are set up for somewhat success. I'm glad that you're trying to make it over.
I don't even know that the flight schedules are run through October yet, are they? They usually are about like 6 months in advance. So
I thought it'd be like nine months.
Is it 9 months? Then you might be right there then. So you could be okay.
But I never either way, booked that far in advance.
But. Yeah, I don't either. But Tony, I hope you have a great time. I hope you get to go. Every West Ham fan, if they are able, financially able to, and want to go, you should definitely do it at least once in your life, because While we are spoiled by the television coverage over here, there is nothing like going to a game in person. It beats every aspect of watching it on TV. I shouldn't say every aspect, because there are some benefits to watching on TV, definitely, but going in person trumps watching on TV every single time, in my opinion. I would always rather go in person than watch on TV. So,
next one's from Jeremiah. He says, how many young lads do you want to see make the Europa League starting 11 this week? So what are you expecting there?
That's tough. I don't even know the youngsters. Like, when Sonny Perkins came on against Vienna, I had no idea who that was. I was like, who is Perkins? Who is this? Number 64. Who is this kid? I would like to see every single person that didn't play against, who was our last game, Chelsea. I want to see every single person that didn't play against Chelsea start against Zagreb. And then I want to see all the kids. So I want to see the two center backs that I mentioned earlier, Elise and Baptiste, I think are their names. As far as goalkeeper goes, I think you have to play Areola still. If you don't play Areola, this might be controversial, but I would give a start to David Martin. I know that probably won't go down well with a lot of people. You don't want to play someone out of sympathy or any sentimental reasons. I don't think you play someone for sentimental reasons. In this case, if you're not going to play Areola, I would love to see David Martin make a start. I don't know if you guys agree with that. I would love to hear your thoughts on that. So shoot me a tweet on Twitter at Brawley Darbin and let me know what you think about that, because I think that could divide opinion. I think David Martin starting in the Europa League would be an amazing story, but I also can see and understand why you wouldn't want to do it for sentimental reasons. So I totally get that. As far as other spots outside of the center backs, to be honest, I don't know enough of the kids to know what to do. I trust David Moyes' opinion. Let's just put it that way on the kids. But, you know, like I said, I would just love to see, if you don't play Areola, I would love to see David Martin get a start and goal against Zagreb. So, Tony, what do you think about playing the kids?
Yeah, I'd like to see as many out there and some rotation guys. I don't really want to see any starters. It's a no-need situation. I'd feel slightly shitty if I was a fan who bought tickets and I got to go watch us get waxed 5-0 against Zagreb because we played a bunch of 15-year-olds. But I also, like, understand that injuries are happening left and right now and we can't be risking people. So next up is from Amish Goat Farm.
Can you say real quick, what did you think of my idea about potentially starting David Martin in goal?
Darren Randolph, is there a reason? Is he injured?
No, he just,
or you're literally just going for the story.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all right with it. I don't have an issue with it. There's literally nothing to lose.
Be a great story.
I'm just going, I don't know why you, I think if I was Areola, I'd be kind of pissed.
This is something that Moyes would have to talk about it with Areola and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And if he says, no, I want to play, then you play him. If he's okay with it, and apparently everyone loves Dave Martin in that locker room. Like, everyone loves him, which is the only reason why I would put it out there. I would put it out there to the boys and say, hey, what do you think if I surprise Dave with the start against Zagreb? What do you think? And kind of gauge
the room. Well, if I was Ariel, I'd say, well, if you still give him my appearance bonus, then yeah. But because as much as it's a feel-good situation, business is business, and making money is making money.
Agreed.
So, and competition is competition. So it's like, yeah, that feels good to give Dave Martin a start. Also, like, yo, I came to – if I was Ariel, like, yo, I didn't come here to feel good. I came here to play. So I don't really agree with it. I think that I would rather just play the backup guy who I think could potentially be a starter anyway, rather than just pissing him off and making him like, yo, why the fuck did I even come here?
Which is why you would ask him, which is what I said, which is why I would go over it with him.
So, yep, Amish Goat Farm said, which is not Ryan, says, can Moyes get GSB to put money up for a center back and a striker in January, or does it stick with Dawson Diop? I think that they do. I think that they definitely buy a center back or two. I really think that they will. I don't think that they're going to buy a striker, even though they should. I've heard that we're linked to a few guys. I think we should get a striker. But this is where you and I disagreed before going into transfers a little bit. Is this is where how I feel about Lingard. Like, yeah, it's a steal for 10 mil. And like at 10 mil, this is a player that you were going to get for 30 in the summer. Excuse me. But at the same time, if there's a pot and an allocation of resources, another midfielder there is not what we need. It's a striker and center backs. Because if Antonio's not scoring and or getting the ball to him, there's literally no other formation change we could do. We can't put a second striker up there. We can't move people around because there's no other options up top. So to answer your question, though, yeah, I do think that the board and the new board, I should say, put out some money, and I wouldn't say go a full raid, but I think that they get a few unknown players.
I agree with you in the fact that I think they will put up money. Simply because I think Moyes is going to demand it. I still disagree with you on Jesse Lingard, which I mean, maybe I don't. You said for 10 million, you'd probably do it. But if there's a restriction, like if we're only get 30 million to spend, are you going to spend 10 million of that on Jesse Lingard? I personally would still do it. The versatility he gives you, he can be played as a striker, not my favorite position for him to play, but he can be played up there, which is why I'm okay with him being brought in. Now, if we bought Lingard and nothing else, I would be upset. If we bought Lingard and a center back, I'd be more okay with it. But ideally, we're going to buy Lingard, at least one center back, maybe another one in on loan, and then I would go get an out-and-out striker. The problem with going to get an out-and-out striker is who's going to want to come and just sit behind Antonio. I understand that's the problem, which is why I would be looking at the championship and saying, hey, we're in all these competitions. You're not going to be a starter if Antonio's fit, but if for some reason he goes down, or even if
we switch up the formations
in the cups that we're in, then you're definitely going to get to play. But just know that you're coming in to play second fiddle, which most strikers are greedy individuals, so a lot of them won't be happy with that. So, which is why I understand that's the issue. So, but yeah, I think GSB will spend, and hopefully getting Krasinski in or whatever his name is from Czech Republic, hopefully he is willing to send in some of his own funds too and make something happen. The next question here is from Scott at Reno Hammer. He says, where do we go with our backs? Arthur Masuaku is not a true defender. I see Ben Johnson and Sofal, but who slots in back there? Which I'm not really sure the question there. I don't know if you can interpret that a little bit better than I am. But I guess maybe he's saying what's our back four with all these injuries. So for me, Scott, if this isn't what you're asking, I apologize. For me, if you're in a back four right now with all the injuries that we have, we're going to go Cresswell, who should be back at left back. And then we go Dawson Diop and then Sofal, which isn't the end of the world. That's a fine back four. That
back four has played a few games for us anyway. So yeah. I'm happy with that. I think but, that's the greatest thing about the season is we have depth now,
but we do need more depth is the answer to that. Two center backs being the main issue there. And hopefully Fred, I don't know what's going on with Fredericks either. I haven't seen him around in a while, but he's a good guy to fill in there also. And he's played a left back a couple of times too. So.
Mm-hmm. Last but not least, AG Harris, the fourth says, with us in the knockout rounds of the Europa League, I say we I say we field an A team against Leeds in the FA Cup to maximize our chances of silverware. Also, who do y'all think will draw next in Europe? So I'll let you take this first. Are you going A team in the FA Cup?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. And I should take that back. I don't. When are we playing Leeds? When is that?
It'll probably be January 13th or something. I can look. It's usually the first or second week in January.
Oh, apologize, I don't know that. Okay, yeah. So it's January the 8th. On January 1st, we play Crystal Palace. On January 16th, we're playing Leeds again. We play Leeds back to back. Both at home. Yeah. So I changed my mind. So since we have a week in between games. Now, is there a possibility of a Europa game?
No, Europa League won't be till March because February will be the play-in. And then okay. March will be the 16th.
Well, sweet. Then, yeah, I'm playing a regular team.
Well, yeah, they do this so that the FA Cup is a Saturday weekend.
Yeah.
And also it's a whole weekend between Palace away. There is a heavy fixture load between Palace – the week before where you have Palace, Watford, Southampton on.
Yeah, I'm guessing
three games in a week.
It's all going to depend still, on
7 days. Yeah.
If it's all going to depend on what our injury situation is. But as of right now, I'd play a regular team against Leeds because we have a week to recover before and after. So yeah, I'd play a full team. And apparently Leeds are known for going with like a C squad. Bielsa just doesn't try in the cups apparently, which I did not realize, but apparently he does that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we're in good shape, and I think that we should really put a full team out for that. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that's about it.
The
next game we have obviously is Zagreb, and then we have in the league we have Burnley at home. Prediction for Zagreb, I think, is pointless because we have no idea what team's going to be put out there. But Burnley, why don't you give us a little prediction? What do you think happens this weekend?
I think we come out and beat Burnley. I think the boys are going to hopefully realize that we had a mentality problem against Wolves, a mentality problem against Brighton. And they came out swinging against Liverpool, City, and Chelsea and won two out of those three. So, and I think they played well against City for the circumstances. So I think they realize that we're up for the big teams and down for the lower teams. And I think that they will change that mentality against Burnley and beat them 2-0.
Yeah, I'll go with I wanted to give us a clean sheet, but I don't think we will keep a clean sheet. I'll go 2-1 win. I agree with all the reasons you stated. I agree. I think we're a much, much, much better team than Burnley. Hopefully, David Moyes can whisper in Tarkovsky's ear and say, come to East London because we need you, buddy. I would like to take him away from Burnley. I don't know how controversial this is. I don't know if anyone would agree with this. I would actually be okay with for the right price, not necessarily in January, but taking Chris Wood in as backup striker. I think he's a big center forward target man that could fit well into our system. I would look into him. He'd be the perfect backup. I would love to have him in as a backup. But, I'll go 2-1 West Ham. Happy days. We win against Zagreb. We win against Burnley. We win against Arsenal. We beat Norwich. And then we beat Spurs in the cup. And we're into a semifinal of the cup. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself there. I think that's it. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. We got some exciting stuff in the works in the future. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully we can start announcing some things going on here in the near future. Until then, you can follow us on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Brawley Darbin, and you can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Clark Dupe. Until then, I only have one thing to say. We are fucking massive. Come on, you Irons. 57,000 people packed. Hear the fans shout from the back. Take the ball and then we all attack. Make opponents feel the hammer crack. Wild nights, highlight stats. Tony got you covered on that. Brawley got the stories and the facts. Together, everything is down packed. Three-time goal winners, but now it's time to get another cup. West Ham fans, stand up. West Ham fans, stand up. I'm forever blowing bubbles. And my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Pie. Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Said I'm forever blowing bubbles. And my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast. Y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing.
bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Hey.
Players, big games, big moments, big rewards. Absolutely. And huge disappointment. All season, promotion demanded by West Ham. On a sunny afternoon in May at Wembley, promotion to the Premier League has been delivered. Ricardo Bassey, one of the January arrivals, with the biggest goal he will have ever scored. And West Ham, Wembley winners again for the first time since 1980, but more significantly, back in the Premier League.